Washington, D.C. This is Warbird Radio.
Learn the real story of the world's first atomic mission by ordering your copy of the 509th Remembered. Read for yourself the stories of the men who were there, plus see hundreds of never-before-seen photographs. Just visit warbirdradio.com/deals. That's warbirdradio.com/deals and order your copy of the 509th Remembered today.
Hi, this is Mike Chilson, host of the RC Scale Builder Show here on Warbird Radio. If you're interested in scale models, join us every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern for interviews and the latest news and events in RC Scale. The RC Scale Builder Show here on Warbird Radio.
Now showing on aerocinema.com.
It was called the Ultimate Interceptor. An aircraft of such advanced design and promise, it captivated the U.S. Air Force for over a decade. Born from the fertile mind of Alexander Cartvelli, the XF-103 was to be the best and most fantastic interceptor ever conceived. As one of the missing Century Series fighters, the XF-103 represented a quantum leap forward in fighter design. In many ways, it was too advanced. Flight at Mach 3 required new exotic materials and a power plant that had not yet been used on any operational jet aircraft. As an interceptor, the XF-103 was the ultimate expression of an idea that was born during the First World War, high above the streets of London.
Log on now to warbirdradio.com/deals and receive a special offer from our friends at AeroCinema. That's warbirdradio.com/deals.
Now, this is Don Kennedy, host of Big Band Jump, a part of Warbird Radio. Tune in, take off with the excitement of Warbird Radio.
Supporting bees the old-fashioned way. This is Warbird Radio. Tune in. Take off.
Good evening, everybody. This is your host, Zane Adams, coming to you live on May 19th, 2012 with the Wix Warbird Weekly Show. Live here on warbirdradio.com. Thanks for joining us this evening. We've got a great show in store for us. We've got a couple of housekeeping things to do. So I want to tell everybody here that's to go to the site, warbirdradio.com/deals, and go on there. We've got a lot of neat stuff on there. AeroCinema is up there, one of our great sponsors there. They've got a lot of interesting things. Just heard their commercial here on the intro to the show. Wright Brothers catalog is on there. They've got a lot of neat stuff too. I really love the t-shirts. So go over there to the Wright Brothers catalog. You can get that link there at warbirdradio.com/deals. And also a new sponsor here, 509th Remembered. This is a group remembering the 509th Bomb Group, the guys that dropped the atomic bomb, and Enola Gay and all those guys. So they've got a lot of interesting things over there, a lot of books, videos, CDs, that kind of stuff. So check out their site there, and remember, anything you guys purchase out there helps the station here, helps us to stay on the air, bring you great content. So that's at warbirdradio.com/deals. So make sure you go over there and check it out. There's a lot of neat stuff over there, and us Aero people can never get enough swag, so it's all there. It's good stuff. So check it out there. Also, tonight we've got a special guest tonight. We'll get to him shortly, but want to go through the what's kind of becoming a regular here, my weekly air show roundup. There's a lot of neat air shows on the books for this weekend. And the Warbirds over the beach there at Virginia Beach, Jerry Yagan's fun house, they're supposed to have their ME-262 up and flying this weekend. It's not going to be flying off the grass, but it'll fly in from another spot and fly over. Focke-Wulf 190 is going to be there. The B-17 Chucky's up and running. John Bronner assures us that he's taking good care of our lady and going to have her up in the air. She's going to be flying off the grass this weekend. They've got a lot of neat stuff planned for the air show this weekend, and it promises to be a great show. Not to be missed if you're out there on the East Coast there. So another great show on the East Coast, the Joint Services Open House at Andrews Air Force Base. Diamond Lil's going to be there, the B-24. So this will be her air show premiere, I believe. Panchito's going to be there, the Spirit of Freedom's C-54. Collings Foundation's supposed to have some stuff. Blue Angels headlining. This is going to, it looks like, to shaping up to be one of the big military shows of the year there at Andrews. So if you're out there in that part of the country, I think Matt is supposed to be out there sometime this weekend. He may be out there only Friday, but if you're around and if you see Matt Jolly from Warbird Radio, just knock him on the head, tell him we said hello, and be soft with him. He'd be nice. He's a good guy. But Payne Field Aviation Day out on the West Coast out there in Seattle area. They've historic flight and the Flying Heritage Collection going to be up, have a few of their interesting birds running. I'm not sure if this is going to be the IL-2 is going to be out there or what. You never know with the Flying Heritage Collection what they're going to have up and running. Also on the West Coast, the March Air Force Base, they're promises to have a good show out there. Always does. That's a good military show. If you're across the pond, the Shuttleworth Spring Evening Air Show 2012 at Old Borden Airdrome, that is always an interesting thing. I've always seen photographs and videos from that air show, and the British do it up in style. There'll be a bunch of old airplanes and flying there. I imagine there'll be a Spitfire 20 or who knows. You never know what the Brits are going to put up in the air, but it'll always be fun. So if you're over on that part of the pond, side of the pond, I'd like to hear from you next week. See if what you guys what went on out there. I mean, tell us about it. Let's have a report from the field maybe next week on one of the shows here. And here in local in Texas, the Hondo Army Airfield Fly-In 2012, Devil Dog, the B-25, and Texas Raiders, CAF will be in force there, be a Mustang on field, and some other things they promised. So that's a little bit of roundup. That's some highlights of the shows coming up this week. The buzz is out there for air shows. This is great air show season. It's getting nice and warm. The weather promises to be good. So get out and support your local air show. It's good family fun, and support the warbirds. Go out and see a flying warbird this weekend. That's my mantra. And and one more thing, speaking of air shows, coming up in a month, June 16th in Hamilton, Ontario, the Canadian Warplane Heritage Museum is celebrating their 40th anniversary. And that promises to be a barn burner. I know the B-24 and the B-29 from the CAF are going to be up there. Hopefully the Lancaster will be back up in the air. And that promises to be a really good show. So if you're up there in Hamilton, Ontario, for our friends north of the border in Canada, check it out. That ought to be a good, fun show to be at. We'd appreciate some updates from that. Update us at the Warbird Information Exchange. That's who the Wix is, the Wix Warbird Weekly. And there, that's the best place for information, Warbird information on the web. So check it out there at warbirdinformationexchange.org. There's a good write-up on the Hamilton Air Show, and I look forward to seeing items from that next month. So it's always fun. Get out and see the airplanes fly. So that's the best part of it. So tonight we're going to go ahead and get to our guest here. Everybody out there knows the Reno racer, Miss America. And Miss America has been flown by our guest here, Brent Heisey. Brent, are you there with us?
Yes, I am, Zane. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on tonight. Miss America, she's one of those iconic Reno racers, and I it's one of those airplanes that that everybody knows. She's been on the course at Reno for many, many years, and you've been acquainted with her for, 9 or 10 years now? Tell us a little bit about your relationship with the airplane.
Well, obviously growing up in the 60s and 70s, I mean, who didn't see the Cox model of Miss America? And, honestly, I'm kind of embarrassed. When I first saw it, I thought that's a silly paint job for a Mustang. I grew up loving, Warbird Mustangs.
Sure.
What kid didn't build a million models of it? But in any event, once I started shopping for a Mustang, I really had no idea what I wanted because I was so new to the Warbird game. In fact, a Mustang was the first Warbird I ever considered. I grew up learning how to fly on a Cessna 150, then I had a 172, then a Mooney, then a friend of mine was kind enough to let me fly his Pitts. And after that, I thought, I've always wanted a Mustang. And, when you're new to the game and you don't know anybody in it, it's really kind of a daunting task.
I can imagine.
Yeah. I knew nobody in the Warbird community. Somebody said, hey, there's somebody down in Texas named Nelson Azell. So I took a trip down to Breckenridge, Texas, Mount Nelson, and he started talking to me about Mustangs. And in any event, I was looking in Warbird, and somebody said, we've heard of a Mustang named Miss America for sale in California. And this was back in the summer of 1993. And I thought, well, I'll go look at it. And at the time, it was owned by the Museum of Flying at Santa Monica.
Right.
So I got on an airliner with a friend. We flew out there, and, you know, I had the privilege of meeting David Price and Alan Prestwood and Bruce Lockwood and the other people at the museum. We were just class guys. They really treated me right. When they took me to the museum, Miss America was sitting under a spotlight, and it was love at first sight.
and they set you up, sounds like.
they really did. And, you know, when I saw her, I just said, okay, how much?
Yeah.
And, you know, that was the end of the negotiation. You know, I was really pretty much of a sucker, but, you know, I've really never regretted it. It's been a wonderful journey with that airplane. You know, I've owned her now since 1993, so I would imagine I've owned her probably as long as anybody has.
Yeah, pretty much.
Hallie owned her for quite a while, but then she kind of changed hands for a while. So I feel very privileged to get to carry on that legacy.
Yeah, well, and it's a—I mean, owning a Mustang is one thing. I can't imagine the feeling of strapping one of those things on. But you kind of, stuck your foot in it, I guess, when you bought this Icon. Like you said, the Cox model, I remember that as a kid, you know. I mean, and when I was a kid, you know, I've grown up a little bit around airplanes, you know, and I'm a private pilot and et cetera like you. But I just, the airplanes, the Reno racing, and which is what she has been for a long time, is and a racer. I mean, she set what world speed records, what LA to DC back in 69, and you know, she's been at Reno since the 60s. But the only place we ever saw Reno racing when I was a kid was, you know, Wide World of Sports would have an hour show on the Reno racing. You know, that's the only place I ever saw it. And
wasn't that a great experience? I remember seeing that same broadcast and thinking,
yeah,
oh my God, how does anybody ever get to do something like that?
Yeah.
That just seemed like an impossible dream. Little did I know that, you know, eventually I'd be privileged enough to get to kind of carry on the torch with Miss America.
Sure.
But you know, being, you know, the most complicated thing I owned prior to that was a Mooney and a Cessna. And let me tell you, when you get into the Warbird game, you really don't have an idea of what you're getting into, especially when you don't know anybody in it.
Well,
the time and the cost and is really pretty daunting. But, you know, I've never looked back. I think it's one of the best decisions I ever made.
Was the decision when you bought the airplane? I mean, you were looking for a Mustang to fly, obviously, I guess, recreationally or possibly air show wise and this kind of thing. Were you planning to race, to campaign the airplane?
You know, not at all. In that I had never been to a race prior to seeing Miss America, and when I first bought her, I knew the Museum of Flying was racing her, and David Price was flying her, and Alan Preston and Bruce Lockwood, and they offered to continue flying her. And at the time, you know, I thought that was a reasonable thing to do. I thought it was a very good program for Miss America because, unlike some airplanes that just sit around, when an airplane gets prepared for Reno, it's really gone through from nose to tail. And I thought it was one of the best inspections and maintenance that Miss America ever had. So really, I enjoyed watching Miss America fly at Reno in 93 and 94 under the museum. Obviously, those guys did a superlative job with Miss America.
Right.
But, you know, there's only so long you can sit on the sidelines before the bug bites you. You know, my first experience racing, I decided, well, gosh, you know, I've got to try this, was at the Phoenix 500 in 1995.
Okay, yeah.
And I and my crew chief, which at the time, that was my only crew, we showed up, and our equipment consisted of a Zeus fastener and just a lot of curiosity. We had no idea what we were doing. But it was really an eye-opening experience, going through the check ride of the Phoenix 500 and just getting to get out there and participate with other guys in these kind of airplanes was really eye-opening. You know, I think it's a real tribute to people that race that, you know, you're able to pull this off, and that it really is a pretty demanding arena. and there's really not much practice for it. We get to do it once a year, and people
right.
expect us to do it really pretty good. And I think it's, you know, the history of Reno overall has been one of safety, and I think it's a real tribute to how Reno has been run and what they demand of the pilots.
Sure, yeah, and I've never been to Reno. It's one of those on my list, you know. There's a lot of us out there that it's on the list of things to do. It's on my bucket list, so to speak, and, you know, I just can't imagine seeing the airplanes run that fast. They came to Texas one time, and I wasn't able to go out there. I was on, you know, I had a vacation planned and had some other I had other things committed before I really realized it was coming. And but, I mean, and we'll go into Reno a little bit here, but I mean, putting the airplane through its paces. I mean, and at that time they didn't have the pylon racing school like they do now, did they?
No, that's very true. You know, when you showed up at you know, when I showed up initially at Phoenix, you know, being a rookie in those days, I mean, you didn't have many friends out there. You better bring them with you because you weren't going to find any there. But you know, the people at the Museum of Flying helped me so much, and I owe so much, you know, of my career to Alan and David and Bruce. They really kind of took me under their wings. You know, at that time, there was no rookie school, you know, to qualify for the Phoenix 500, which at the same time was the same qualifications for Phoenix. You know, you went and flew with a veteran pilot. You had to fly in formation. You had to do a roll and then chase him around the track, and that was it. They signed you off, and you're, you know, licensed to go have fun, which, I mean,
well,
survived is amazing.
Did you do any work up yourself before you went? I mean, did you get out and find a place in Oklahoma where you could go out and tear around at, you know, maybe at altitude to kind of get a feel of what you're doing?
Everybody, you know, gets a Warbird, you know, does a little low-level flying at times.
Sure.
But nothing, you know, at these kind of power settings. You know, when we first started racing Miss America, you know, we were in the bronze classes, and we would run power settings anywhere from 50 to 60 inches, which, you know, for a normal Mustang, you know, you're getting pretty close to its max power.
Sure.
And, you know, it's an eye-opening experience in that, you know, most people that fly Mustangs, they may push up to that power for takeoff, and then you're out of that power setting. You know, to leave an airplane in that power setting at those temperatures and pressures is really a demanding issue, you know, not only the airplane, but the pilot.
Sure. Well, and did it, I guess it really got your attention. Was it, you know, I'm flying that low. I mean, the only time I've ever flown that low is, you know, when you're pilot training and your instructor pulls the throttle back and says, find a place to land. And I had a instructor that had a sense of humor, and he'd always find a field full of cows for me to line up on so we could scare a few cows. But I mean, nothing like, you know, tearing around pulling G's at low altitude like that.
Well, and, you know, it really is a visual rush. And it is such an incredible view out of that airplane. You know, I wish I had time just to sit there and enjoy it at times, because it really is fun. I enjoy watching cockpit videos of Reno, because then I get to sit back and just really kind of take in the whole view. There you're so concentrated not only on, you know, is your airplane going to make it around the track another lap? You know, are you going to find the next pilot? Are you going to make it on the course? Are you going to collide with another airplane? I mean, your plane gets pretty full out there.
Yeah, I can imagine. But, I mean, I've got, you know, do a little flight simulator on the computer, and there's an option you can race it out there, and I have a hard time finding the pylons on the Reno course, at least flying on the computer. I can't imagine in real life that it can't be much easier out there.
Well,
managing the airplane itself has got to be difficult.
You know, to be honest, you know, I when I first started out there, there'd be times where you were straining to see the pylon, depending on the time of day and the lighting. These pylons had orange tops on them, and let me tell you, they start blending into the desert. And more times than not, I've wandered off in the middle of nowhere thinking, where on earth am I?
Yeah.
You know, fortunately, I've been out there now since I started racing at Reno in 95, so I do have some familiarity with the course, so, you know, it's a little easier to get around these days.
Yeah, well, sure. Yeah, you pick your points, and once you know the course, I imagine. But I guess that probably the first time you were there, it was a good thing maybe you weren't in the lead. You have somebody to follow around, huh?
Oh, well, let me tell you. Yeah, the lead wasn't an issue when I first started. You know, I was just happy to be in the same airspace with these guys. You know, just the whole, you know, process. You know, you get into the airplane, you strap it on, and you have this crowd watching you. And you know, any pilot who says they don't become anxious when they're under scrutiny, you know, they're lying.
Sure.
Anybody gets nervous. And then, you know, from everywhere, from, you know, the takeoff to the join-up to listening to Steve Hinton talk to you, telling you, you know, close it up, pull up, do whatever.
Right.
It was really daunting at first. And then, the start was absolutely, you know, terrifying at first, because here you have a bunch of airplanes all in the line. And let me tell you, at times this isn't a very cooperative formation. Everybody's kind of going for the same spot. And
yeah.
it's a tribute to the skill of the racers that it's been as safe as it is.
Yeah. Well, when you bought the airplane, was it basically a stock airplane? I mean, there's been some changes to the airplane since you bought it.
You know, when I bought Miss America, the main changes that were done were the wings were shortened about 2.5 feet.
Okay.
And interesting, Bob Hoover was the one that did the testing of the airplane for the FAA. And I talked to Bob quite a bit about what he thought of Miss America. And honestly, he said he couldn't tell a whole lot of difference between it and a regular Mustang. They tell me it's faster because they've shortened the wings, and I'll believe them. But, you know, I've flown a few other regular Mustangs, but, you know, you just never have the opportunity to fly them at the power settings we fly Miss America.
Sure, sure. And what have you done, other than the wings, I mean, what have you done to it since the...
You know, I think the main thing, we changed the scoop. We streamlined the scoop. And we've done some different experiments with, you know, streamlining the rest of the fuselage. But overall, except for the scoop and the wing shortening, it's pretty much a stock Mustang.
Oh.
One thing I wanted when I got a Mustang is I didn't want something that had only one purpose. And, you know, some Mustangs are really dedicated Reno racers that probably aren't a whole lot of fun to go fly on the weekends.
Yeah, stiletto is probably
a
handful.
I wanted something I could enjoy the whole year.
Sure, sure. And do you have a stock an engine? Do you have a stock engine that you run year round?
Yes, we have a stock engine, and we have a race engine that we'll swap out. Ricky Shaneholzer does our engines, and he has always done just a superlative job. He has our race engine now, getting it all changed out and ready to go, and we're getting our stock engine back in Miss America. It hadn't flown in a few months, but we need to get it back up and get it exercised. There's always, you know, anytime these airplanes sit on the ground, there's demons you have to get out of them.
Sure.
And it'll take us a few months to get it all shaken down, but we'll be ready for Reno this year.
Yeah, cool. And I know there's a lot of people out there ready for Reno this year. I know last year was a tough year for the Warbird crowd, for the aviation air show crowd, for the Reno group. Losing Jimmy Leeward like that was just not an easy thing for anybody to go through. And I know you guys are a close knit community there as racers. And and I don't necessarily want to hash. We don't hash out that. We don't do accidents here on Warbird Radio. But I've seen some of the reports, some of the things the FAA and the NTSB has sent out. I read through the little PDF that they sent out here recently about Reno. And what is your thoughts on some of the changes they've talked about, or you know, how things are going to go forward from here?
Well, you know, I think things will progress in a very positive way, in that anytime anybody wants to, you know, interject safety into the racing, I think all the pilots are for it. You know, I think there's only so much you can do, because, you know, we're flying high-speed airplanes very close together, very close to the ground. So inherently is a situation that's fraught with some danger. That's just part of racing, just as it is in NASCAR, Indianapolis 500, or any other motor sport. But I think, you know, they've made the medical requirements a little more stringent, which I think is a good idea, in that, you know, I don't think anybody wants to go out to Reno, put themselves, the crowd, the airplanes, anything at risk. You know, we want to have a safe, fun week. You know, we're there for not only for our enjoyment, but we want the crowd to enjoy us. And we do that by maintaining safety and giving them a good show.
Sure. Sure.
You know, I think they may change some of the geometry of the course, but, you know, bottom line, they can do anything they want to the geometry of the course. It's still going to be a race, and it's still going to be exciting.
Well, the excitement's certainly there. I mean, the airplanes and you guys have progressed from being the airplanes just was a bronze racer for a long time, and you guys have progressed and up through the ranks. And what's your personal goal for this year?
Our goal is to we'd like to compete in the gold race. We've done that a few times, and initially. We thought we would take baby steps with Miss America, which is good because, my crew had a learning curve. I had a learning curve. It's something we didn't want to jump in. We had no pretense that we're going to come out in our first year be gold racers. And
right.
That didn't occur for many years. And I think it's me becoming more comfortable with the airplane, our crew becoming more comfortable, and also, just making the decision and the financial decision that you want to go faster. Because these planes go fast if you put money into them. They don't inherently go fast because you have some secret that somebody else doesn't. And so you have to decide whether the financial risk to the airplane is worth the fun factor. I think we're all competitive. We all want to do our best. And we made that decision that, we want to try to go fast, which means we got to have a bigger engine.
Well,
and that's where Ricky Schoenholzer has done just a superlative job. We're under no illusion that our airframe is as fast as something like Strega or Voodoo or some of the other Mustangs that really have changed their aerodynamic shape.
Right.
We wanted to be an airplane that would be competitive in the gold in that, when those airplanes take off, you don't know who's going to land. You don't know who's going to break. And who knows? We're there. We're going to be competitive. And who knows where we'll end up.
Yeah, and you had speaking of braking, I mean, you've had one kind of off-the-course incident.
I have. I think that was in 2002, and we're in qualifying, and just like anything else in life, you think things are really going good. You've really got this dialed in, and then all of a sudden, bang, everything starts shaking, and all of a sudden your world changes in dramatic fashion. In retrospect, I probably made the wrong turn and tried to make the wrong runway. But, once you've committed to that, you knew there was a finite amount of time this airplane was going to stay in the air.
Sure.
That it's coming down. It's just a matter of where.
Yeah.
I tried to make one runway, and, I would have done some things different now. But when I lined up on that runway, all of a sudden I could feel the wings start to stall. And I thought, if this stalls, this thing's going to go up on its side, and this isn't going to be a good ending. My best option is to level the wings and just, I think the Mustang airframe is very strong. And at that time, I thought, this is my best option. So I leveled the wings and just took off through the desert. It's quite a ride. What you don't realize, when oil is all over your canopy, in the movies it's black. At Reno, oil is pretty fresh, so it's pretty clear. But the minute you hit any type of dirt, now you have nothing but dirt on the canopy.
Yeah, it all disappears and all turns around.
And all of a sudden, I'm on a very bumpy ride, and I can't see out the front. The only thing I remember of that is looking out to my right side through one little clear area of the canopy and passing a porta potty.
Yeah.
And thinking this isn't going to be good.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Fortunately, the plane got damaged pretty good. I had a few bumps and bruises, but, nothing major of any nature. And, we learned a lot from that accident. And probably the best thing that came out of that was the complete rebuild of Miss America. In that, they took it 100% apart, and you'd be surprised how old things look in an airplane that was built in 1944 that's never been taken apart.
Yeah.
So for the longevity of that airplane, that was the best thing that ever happened to it.
Sure. Yeah, and it's a tough thing to do. I mean, it costs a lot of money, and you blow an engine, and you hurt your ego a little, I guess, and all. But if you could walk away with it, And what you say is poignant there. You made a decision, and that's what I was always taught by in flight, and flight instructors is, you make a decision, you stick with that, because changing your mind can ultimately kill you as well.
Absolutely. That is the one advice, when I talk to a young pilot, is You know, I tell them, this airplane doesn't mean anything. You mean something. Yeah. And you make sure you survive whatever situation you're in. You can always get a nicer, newer airplane.
There you go.
And, you know, again, it all worked out well for us. You know, we've had a few other incidents at Reno. I think a few years after that, the ADI pump quit during the race, and all of a sudden it blew off my induction trunk, blew off the bottom cowling. You know, I didn't know what was coming off the airplane, but, you know, I knew some part pieces were leaving, and pieces on the inside were now going to the outside. Fortunately, we made that down and you know, got the airplane fixed. I don't think we ended up competing that year because that pretty much did that engine in.
But, yeah, it seems like I've seen, you know, remember photos of that. It seems like there's a big kind of hole in the side of the airplane. So.
Yeah, there's just a few holes in there. You know, when you take these airplanes, and I know other airplanes do higher power, but let me tell you, you know, people talk about, you know, well, people in the bronze race or civil race aren't really doing much. Well, let me tell you, they're pushing these airplanes harder than they ever were during the war. You know, during the war, you know, these airplanes could be pushed around 60, 63 inches for a few minutes. And by the regs, they had to be overhauled. You know, out there in the civil race, I'm pushing this area at about 100, 110 inches, you know, 34, 3,500 RPM. I mean, this thing is like a freight train going downhill. Yeah. And, you know, we may not be 500 miles an hour, but let me tell you, it's still going plenty fast.
You're 400 and something. You know, running 400 and something over the ground like that is certainly nothing to choke at there. It's, you know, I can imagine, yeah.
One thing we did, you know, after you know, we've had the engine incidents, is we changed up the cockpit configuration on this thing, and that now we have LED lights right under the windscreen that are now just color-coded. Because, you know, you get so task-saturated trying to find the course, look for other airplanes. You know, I now have it just all color-coded, so as long as everything's green, I'm good. You know, yellow, bad. Red, really bad.
Really bad,
so
yeah.
They've really tried to, you know, simplify my workload, and that's really helped us a bunch.
Sounds like a Formula One racer there, so, yeah.
It really is. You know, we don't have telemetry, but let me tell you, at my age, my hearing's getting bad enough, and the airplane's loud enough that they can tell me something I probably wouldn't understand them anyway. So I'm just happy to be a passenger above in an airplane still flying.
All right. Hey, well, Brent, we're going to take a quick break here, if you don't mind. Stick with us after the bottom of the hour here.
Sure.
Got a few other questions here to ask you about the museum and some other things going on.
Okay.
So, folks, stand by. We'll be right back.
Live from Washington, D.C., this is Warbird Radio.
Learn the real story of the world's first atomic mission by ordering your copy of the 509th Remembered. Read for yourself the stories of the men who were there, plus see hundreds of never-before-seen photographs. Just visit warbirdradio.com/deals. That's warbirdradio.com/deals and order your copy of the 509th Remembered today.
Hi, this is Mike Chilson, host of the RC Scale Builder Show here on Warbird Radio. If you're interested in scale models, join us every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern for interviews and the latest news and events in RC Scale. The RC Scale Builder Show here on Warbird Radio.
Now showing on aerocinema.com.
It was called the Ultimate Interceptor, an aircraft of such advanced design and promise, it captivated the U.S. Air Force for over a decade. Born from the fertile mind of Alexander Cartvelli, the XF-103 was to be the best and most fantastic interceptor ever conceived. As one of the missing Century Series fighters, the XF-103 represented a quantum leap forward in fighter design. In many ways, it was too advanced. Flight at Mach 3 required new exotic materials and a power plant that had not yet been used on any operational jet aircraft. As an interceptor, the XF-103 was the ultimate expression of an idea that was born during the First World War, high above the streets of London.
Log on now to warbirdradio.com/deals and receive a special offer from our friends at AeroCinema. That's warbirdradio.com/deals.
This is Don Kennedy, host of Big Band Jump, a part of Warbird Radio. Tune in, take off with the excitement of Warbird Radio.
Supporting these the old-fashioned way. This is Warbird Radio. Tune in. Take off.
back, everybody, here to the Wix Warbird Weekly Show here on coming to you live May 16th, 2012. We're with Brent Heise from the Oklahoma Museum of Flying and talking to Miss America, Reno Racing, some other things. Brent, I've got a couple of other things. You guys, the Oklahoma Museum of Flying, tell us a little bit about the museum and a few things. You know, there's you've got a few other airplanes in the stable up there.
You know, I started the museum several years ago just because, you know, a tornado hit our airport one time and tore up our hangar, and then we became orphans for years, and we went from hangar to hangar. Then finally, you know, as much fun as it is to buy more airplanes, finally we said we got to invest in the infrastructure. So we built a large hangar and turned it into the Oklahoma Museum of Flying, and we've had a great time with that. It's really been a nice addition to our airport, and it's amazing the people that would come in out of the just the woods with so many artifacts. We had a gentleman who has become a great benefactor of the museum said, my wife told me to get this out of the attic. It was a Norden bomb site.
No, really?
We have, you know, stories like that all the time. But we've had a lot of good airplanes in there. We had an 85 Sky Raider that, interestingly, just sold to the Collins Foundation.
Yeah, I heard about that.
That was a wonderful airplane. We have an L-39 Albatross. My crew is redoing a T-28, and that's in progress. One of the funnest things we've had lately is the guys have restored a Ryan STA, a nice vintage 40s airplane that really is an exciting airplane to fly. I mean, if you think of a classic airplane, that's it.
And let me that Ryan is they're gorgeous airplanes. It's been one of my favorites for years.
And let me tell you, you know, I take Miss America serious or any of those other planes serious when I go flying. But let me tell you, when I strap in the Ryan, I want to be on my A game. I mean, that's a serious airplane to fly.
It's a trainer in the true sense, I guess, huh?
Well, you know, the PT-19 and some of the others that later on had nice little landing gear. This has a little narrow landing gear. But let me tell you, it will give you certainly a handful if you're not careful.
Yeah.
As I and a lot of crew have found out. But anyway, it's a lot of fun. Other airplanes that we've got going is we've almost completed a replica of a Fokker Eindecker 3, which we're really excited about getting up in the air. But probably the most exciting project that we've kind of kept under wraps is we are building a P-51C.
I saw that on the website, and tell us a little bit about that airplane. What?
You know, it's something I thought about for years in that, for whatever reason, I've always liked the look of the C and B models. And several years ago, I thought, well, you know, this might be something that, one, is doable and would be a good addition to the museum, and just a good addition for aviation, in that there aren't many of these airplanes out. So we set out to really recreate and build as an authentic model of a C model in the world, and that we have gone to no pains to try to reconstruct exactly the gear doors, which are certainly different, the cockpit, the fuselage. We hope this will be one of the finest examples of a C model in the world when it's complete. And we're probably about a half to three-fourths finished with the airplane.
Okay. What's the history of the airplane? Is this an airplane? Are y'all building it? I mean, is this a parts airplane that you're building up as something new, or is this
It's a combination. We did not have a complete airframe to restore. You know, the majority of this airplane will be new components. You know, my crew, Warbirds Incorporated, has done a fabulous job, as has Dennis Schoenfelder in California, the Odegaard crew up in North Dakota, as far as getting wing parts. I mean, it's really been a team effort, and this is going to be a spectacular aircraft when it's completed. And it's something that, you know, once I'm gone, once the museum's gone, it's something we hope will continue on in aviation history. And, you know, eventually somebody else will own her. And I think it'll really be a tribute to the people that flew these during the war.
Yeah, we're all caretakers of these of airplanes. I don't care if
absolutely.
You're flying a 150 or something else. They tend to live on past us, and I understand the sentiment completely.
You know, and we always have veterans come into the museum that flew these aircraft for real, and you know, I really feel at times like a poser, and that I tell these guys, you know, you guys really did that for real, you know,
when it was serious. Yeah.
And, you know, sure. My hat's off to them. I mean, they were the Iron Men.
Yeah.
They deserve all the credit.
Sure, sure. Well, tell us a little bit about the Eindecker. What kind of power do you got in it? What is it?
You know, it's
true
to
original?
It's a Rotax engine from Australia.
Okay.
It is a rotary. It's probably going to have about 100 horsepower. We painted up in a nice German cream-colored, beige-colored. Let me tell you, it's having the giant iron crosses on it. It's got to get your attention.
Yeah, there's a picture of it on your website here, the Oklahoma Museum of Flying.org, under the museum there. There's one little shot of it there, and that's going to be pretty unique. There's not many of those flying around.
You know, there may be. I don't think I think the only original Eindeckers are hanging in museums, but I think there's maybe one or two in the world. And, you know, if somebody says, you know, that's not an original Eindecker, you know, my response would be, of course it's not, you know, is yours.
Right.
You know, we wanted something to let people see and hear and, you know, experience what it was like to see these airplanes in the air. You know, our whole purpose of the museum is we never really wanted anything on static display. We wanted things up and flying so people could really enjoy the unique opportunity to see these things. I mean, it really is a treat.
Yeah, right. So were you going to... You going to strap on the Eindecker, or do you have a test pilot with some experience in something like this?
I don't think anybody else is crazy enough around here to do that, so I'm sure I'll get that job.
Well, at least you're not going to be going real fast, so yeah.
No, hopefully if you hit the ground, you know, you'll be going slow enough that it'll be okay. But, you know, my crew, you know, Warbirds Incorporated, does such a great job at, you know, construction of these things. You know, I've got complete confidence. You know, obviously anything can break, anything can go wrong, but we try to make everything as safe as possible.
Well, that's cool. It's neat to see there. And the T-28,
it'll be way fun.
What's the history of the T-28? Is it Navy or Air Force model?
It is a Air Force model that the guys are restoring, and it's kind of a pet project of them. I've kind of tried to keep my nose out of that. That's their deal, but that should be up and running, I would think, within a year. So, you know, there's lots of exciting things happening. But the best thing is the museum has been a focal place for people that are interested in aviation to come hang out. You know, we all like this stuff because we like the camaraderie, and there's plenty of it to go around here at the museum.
Sure. Yeah. So if you're ever up there, Wiley Post Airport up in Oklahoma City, Bethany, Oklahoma, I guess, officially, but that's where you guys are located. And you guys do a few air shows. I know you've got an L-39 listed as available for air shows. And
absolutely.
I guess Miss America sees a few shows here and there. What have you got scheduled this year other than the Warbirds Over Oklahoma?
You know, we do that, and we've got a few air shows. You know, we haven't committed to a lot because schedule on Miss America as far as when we'd get the stock engine. Now that it should be back in this week or next, we'll probably start booking a few more.
Okay. All right. Well, and I've never seen the airplane. It's terrible. I live here in Fort Worth, and, you know, I don't spend a lot of time in Oklahoma, you know. Us true Texans have a hard time going up there, I guess, sometimes.
You could overcome that. You know, there is a learning curve between Texas and Oklahoma. But if you come up, let me tell you, I'll take you for a ride.
Oh, well, cool. I'll have to come up then. I'll definitely have to come up. That'll give me a reason to come to Oklahoma.
Absolutely. We'll treat you right.
Well, I've only spent two nights in my whole life in Oklahoma, and that's been camping with the Boy Scouts. So it's just one of those kind of deals of just haven't spent a lot of time up there. But I'm going to for sure have to come up and see the airplane. I know it's been up there for a long time, and it's just one of those things, we tend to go other places. And I have a hard time convincing my family that, on vacation or something, we're going to go to the airport. And, you know, that I have to twist their arm a little bit. I've done enough of that over the years,
I know where you're coming from.
We'd
love to have you, Zane.
Well, cool. I will have to come up and see you guys. And you guys are you're going to campaign at Reno this year. Looking forward to that. And you got the C model up and running. The C model is pretty exciting news. You know, like well, you said, there's not really a lot of those around. And
it's going to be spectacular. Right now, we're planning to turn it into a blue noser, but you know that's still up to debate. Some of the guys don't want to polish a whole lot, but we'll see.
Yeah,
but it's going to be a gorgeous airplane. This will be an airplane that turns heads.
Well, cool. I'm looking forward to seeing that. Looking forward to. Well, Brent, I appreciate you coming on Warbird Radio tonight. You are welcome back anytime. If you've got an update on that C model or anything else going, you know, feel free to give us a call, send us an email or something else. We'll have you on anytime. I really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you, Zane. This has been a lot of fun.
Well, you're my first Reno racer I've ever had a real conversation with, other than little bits and pieces here and there. So I appreciate the insight. I know our audience does, and you know, we wish you luck out there at Reno, and go get them, go to that gold race.
We're excited, and you know, everybody you know wants to get past last year and have a good, safe Reno. We want to fly fast, fly low, and turn left.
There you go. All right. Brent Heisey, appreciate you coming on. Thank you.
Thank you. My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Well, there you go. There's Brent Heisey from the Oklahoma Museum of Flying, and some exciting news there. The Oklahoma Museum of Flying got a P-51C under restoration. There's a little blurb on their website. Not much information there. They got a little photograph of what they think. They put it up in Blue Nose 352nd Squadron colors. They've got, you know, picture of Princess Elizabeth there. But that's exciting news. A new Warbird, a new Mustang on the market or out there in the world is always a good thing, you know. So, and I do wish them luck there at Reno. I know Reno's going to be it's going to be tough. I know they've got a long way to go. But, you know, they are selling tickets. They are getting ready for the show, and I think they'll make it work one way or the other. So I really hope that goes well. So I'm about done here this evening. Thought of the day here, you guys need to take care out there. Be safe. That's the air show season in full swing around the country. Like I said, those guys in Virginia are going to be out flying this weekend. Go by, see hi to John Bronner. I know he's golly, he's been working hard for a long time. I think he's been up in the B-17 nonstop for the last 5 days or so. And go by and see John if you're out there at Andrews this weekend. If you see Matt Jolly, tell him we said hello. But you know, but ultimately, and I know you pilots and people out there in the industry that are listening to us, be safe out there. We've got a lot of people going to be coming to see you, and have fun. But ultimately, be safe and. You guys take care of things. And that's all I've got for this evening here from the Wix Warbird Weekly Show. Look forward to hearing you from you guys next week. We'll have another show coming up. Make sure you tune in to the other shows here, the RC Scale Builder Show on Tuesday nights, the Warbird Radio Live, and the Warbird Rescue Show coming on tomorrow. Plastic Scale Modeling Show hour tomorrow as well. Tune in and take off. So thank you guys. Have a good evening.